That was Susie Klein in Cairo for Music Matters. The programme was produced by Peter Meanwell. And you can, of course, follow the shifting political situation in Egypt via BBC News. Music Matters now takes a break for the summer and will return after the proms on September the 14th.
Hello, I'm Claire Martin and hope you can join me for this weekend's edition of Jazz Lineup, a special programme from this year's Glasgow International Jazz Festival. We'll have high-energy Dixieland music from the Nova Scotia Jazz Band, plus the sophisticated rhythms and textures of internationally acclaimed Venezuelan pianist Leo Blanco. This will be the 27th Glasgow Festival, and over the coming weeks, Jazz Lineup will also be bringing you music from Brit jazz giants Stan Tracy and Bobby Wellens, as well as the next generation of jazz stars, including saxophonist Paul Toundrow and pianist Steve Hamilton. So join me for Jazz Lineup from Glasgow tomorrow night at 11:30 on BBC Radio 3 or online afterwards at the Radio 3 website.
This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. A minute past one the time, and the news now from Vaughan Savage.
Egyptians who remain loyal to the ousted President Mohamed Morsi say they will mount more demonstrations today, calling for him to be reinstated. Officials say 30 people have been killed in the past 24 hours in clashes between his supporters and their opponents across the country. 1,000 people have been injured. Nicaragua and Venezuela have both offered asylum to Edward Snowden, the American intelligence worker accused of spying in the US. The White House has refused to comment, but the Americans want to prosecute him for leaking details of their internet and mobile phone surveillance programs. A man has appeared in court charged with the murder of his 11-year-old daughter. The body of Rebecca Thompson was found in the family home in Bushey in Hertfordshire 2 weeks ago. Simon Thompson, who's 52, will appear in court again in St Albans on Tuesday. Police in Tanzania say they have arrested a British man suspected of being involved in terrorist activities in the UK. He's been named as Iqbal Hassan Ali. He was detained in the south of the country with a fake Tanzanian passport. A former Deputy Assistant Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police has revealed that he authorised a secret recording of a meeting between Stephen Lawrence's friend, Duane Brooks, his lawyers and detectives. John Grieve said he wanted a record of the discussions with Mr Brooks, who witnessed the attack on Stephen Lawrence in 1993. The retailer Poundland has become the first to stop selling Chinese lanterns after a similar one caused a huge fire at a recycling depot in the West Midlands. Fire crews have now left the site at Smethwick. 11 of their colleagues were injured dealing with the blaze. A service has taken place in Aberdeen to mark the 25th anniversary of the Piper Alpha disaster. 167 men were killed when two explosions ripped through the oil platform in the North Sea. The weather, most areas will have a dry, sunny and very warm afternoon. It will be cooler on the coasts with sea breezes. Cloud and rain in northwest Scotland and Northern Ireland will spread southeastwards. The highest temperature will be about 26 degrees in London. The BBC News and weather at 3.5 minutes past one.
Which means it's time now to join Lucy Skeeping for today's edition of The Early Music Show.
Welcome to Versailles Palace. I'm exploring some of the music that would have been heard here during the reign of Louis XIV. Oh, and by the way, if you can hear any strange sounds, apart from me, that is, it's because they're renovating the courtyard behind me. Now, the idea is today we're going to create a sort of mythical day following the king from the moment he opened his eyes in the morning to when the royal bonce hit the pillow, the best linen, naturally, after a hard day's ruling. And to guide us through it all, I'm joined by the harpsichordist, writer and expert on French Baroque music, Olivier Beaumont. Olivier, it seems appropriate to begin here in the king's bedchamber. Now, this is a seriously sumptuous room. Maybe not entirely restful, though, because it's got some very busy designs, red and gold tapestries all over the walls, which perhaps might keep one awake. Mind you, the bed looks pretty comfortable. Now, apparently every morning the chief physician, the surgeon, and the king's personal nurse would come into the bedchamber. I suppose they weren't taking any chances on the king's health. And the nurse would plant a kiss on the king's face while the others rubbed the sleepy royal back just to make sure everything was okay. And then the curtains were opened, or the blinds, I suppose, as well. And His Majesty would be presented with a prayer book and some holy water, which was kept just in a little holy water basin by the bed. So there was a sort of religious element and a sense, a kind of thanks for the king having survived another night of his life. On certain days, particularly on the king's birthday, whilst there probably wouldn't have been a musician in the bedchamber, that would have been a bit too intimate, I suppose, he would have heard some music perhaps from outside.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. In ordinary days, there was no music inside the bedroom. But for special days, for example, the St. Louis, 25th of August, which is the feast of the
patron
king.
Patron saint.
Yes. And outside, in La Cour de Marbre, there were hobos and drums who played at the beginning of the morning just for the king. And also the 1st of May, for example, the 1st of January, first day of the year. And some special days, there was always music outside.
What sort of thing might they have played? Would it have been uplifting and energetic music, do you think, sort of like a reveille of some kind?
Of course, it's music for the outside, so it's some march and some fanfare and something very dynamic, of course.
Must be a bit annoying if you've got a royal hangover or something.
It was probably difficult. But the first music of the day was the music at the royal chapel. And after the official rising, the king always did the same way from his bedroom to the chapel. And we can do it now if you wish.
Great, let's go there.
Thank you.
Okay, well, we're tracing the footsteps of Louis XIV now. He's out of bed, he's dressed, and the very next room to the bedroom is a sort of council chamber where he had a meeting with, what, his advisors?
With all the ministers, and it was a sort of the organization for all the day. Generally, just after the rising, he went to the chapel. So the mass was at about 10 o'clock in the morning and after the council, but sometimes it was the council was before. What is funny for us, for music, that he asked for a harpsichord in 1690 in the council study, in the council room. And can you imagine now your prime minister or our president listening harpsichord with ministers during the council of government? Can you imagine such a thing?
Sadly not. So it's literally the room right next to his bedroom. So he passes through here, listening to the harpsichord music, a little gentle briefing on the day, what's happening in the day or what's happening in the world, perhaps.
That's it.
And then on again towards the chapel. Well, we followed the king's not very long walk from his bedchamber, and we're now in the chapel where he would come for mass in the morning. It's the most extraordinary place. Amazing to think this place was his private chapel, presumably for his courtiers, family and himself. It's a two-story chapel, which is quite interesting. There's a balcony around the outside. Perhaps you can give us a little description. There's some fantastic painting on the ceiling.
Yes, of course. We have to say that it's the fifth chapel of the palace. Before this one, which was finished in 1710, just at the end of the reign of Louis XIV, there were four chapels before in another place in the chateau. And this one was what we call a chapelle palatine, with two floors. There was the first floor, where the king and the royal family were standing up just for the ordinary days. And the court was downstairs. And for special days, the king was going down for Christmas, for example, or for 1st of January, some special feasts, religious feasts.
So the king would have, in fact, been looking over the assembled company below on that balcony, directly opposite the organ, where we're actually standing right by the organ now. It's the most wonderful case, a pale greyish, almost a blue colour, covered in carvings of musical instruments, and at the front, lovely relief of King David, I guess, with a harp.
There are two representations in Louis XIV's life. In youth, it was Apollo, the king musician, and with a lyre. And at the end of his life, when he became much more religious, it was, of course, the King David with playing harp.
Either side of the organ console, we've got little step seats, very simple, wooden. Who would have sat there?
For musicians. And we have to say that the ordinary mass every day for the king at nearly 10 o'clock in the morning. It was what we call a mezbahs, low mass, I think, in English, which is not sung, but it was totally accompanied by the music of the chapel, who played what we call grand motet. So what is difficult to understand is a grand motet were some religious music, but not a liturgical music. So it's not a music for the action of the liturgy. And it's why we chose together a wonderful grand motet by Michel Richard de Lalande, who was probably the most important composer in Versailles, because he had a lot of charge at the chamber music, at the chapel music, and he was one of the most important musicians at the court at this time.
Thank you.
Well, I like to imagine that Louis XIV was a bit of a new man, you know, interested in his children's activities. So we've now come down to the ground floor, to the, what was the bedroom of the Dauphin. Just for fun, let's imagine that the young fellow's having a music lesson. Olivier, do you think that Louis might have popped in on the lesson and perhaps made a few points about music?
Why not? He was a musician and he learned a lot of music with very good teachers. It's important to notice that in Versailles, the music was for the concert, but there were a lot of lessons of music in Versailles, and all the musicians of the music of the king taught for royal pupils.
So there were a lot of live-in musicians here whose job it was to be involved with all the people who lived here, teach them music and generally create a musical atmosphere.
Absolutely. For example, the little son of Louis XIV, the Duc de Bourgogne, learned music with François Couperin. And François Couperin was very proud to put on the different volume of harpsichord pieces that is professeur de musique de Monsieur le Duc de Bourgogne.
The musicians of the chamber were a very highly skilled bunch, and they played a variety of instruments. Do we know what specific instruments that Louis' children played?
Sometimes viol or violin, but generally harpsichord. But it's interesting that the music lessons weren't exactly as they are now. So you learn not especially harpsichord, but you learn music, you learn composition, how the music is going, how the music works. Couperin, for example, the title of Couperin was Maître d'accompagnement et de composition. He was the teacher for accompanying music and for composing music, you know. So it was a sort of general music lesson, not especially harpsichord music lesson.
So much more of an all-round study of music.
Exactly.
Which I'm sure was a good thing. Well, to continue our mythical day of Louis XIV here at Versailles, we're now imagining that he's popped down into the Salon de Mars. It's a smallish oblong room overlooking the great gardens. Now, the king, of course, was very interested in music, this kind of thing that was all around him most days. And I suppose one imagines that he may well have enjoyed popping into the odd band rehearsal, perhaps influencing even what they played. I expect he had a thing or two to say. Could we perhaps imagine that the band might have been in a room like this?
Yes, why not? It's difficult to know. But what is sure is that the king liked really to listen to rehearsals, sometimes in his room, sometimes in the rooms of Madame de Maintenon, and why not in the Salon de Mars before the evening. This special room here, the Salon de Mars, was really for music in les soirées d'appartement. You have to imagine that on each side of the fireplace there is some little stages for the musicians when they play. So it's a room especially for the balls, and we have some music which were really composed for this sort of evenings. Wonderful music by Marc-Antoine Charpentier, which is called Les Plaisirs de Versailles, Versailles Pleasures. And it's wonderful. It's with some singers. One is the music, the other one is the conversation, the other one is God for the food, and another one for the games. And they always, of course, have discussion. And sometimes it's very, very rude, but very funny.
So we are very much talking about background music here.
Yes.
It's hard for us to imagine because this music is very often so very good. Terrible to think of talking over it, but I guess that was just how it was.
Yes, we have to imagine that the music was played or sung when everybody spoke in the same time. So it's difficult for us to imagine there is no real concert. For opera, perhaps, but in such evenings, it was music with everybody speaking.
Well, I must say, this is proving to be a very busy day for King Louis XIV. But let's assume he's packing everything in. And we're now in what has got to be the most stunning area of the whole palace. This is the great Hall of Mirrors with the throne at one end. What would have happened here? What kind of music would we have heard?
Generally, there were some very important visits of foreign ambassadors. And it's a complete way they have to do from the royal court, and they have to walk on the what we call escalier des ambassadeurs, the ambassador stairs, which is destroyed now, unfortunately. And they came by the grand appartement and the Hall of Mirrors to the throne of Louis XIV.
So their first view of the king would be very intimidating, very grand, very
exactly,
formal.
Exactly.
They're at one end, the throne's right at the other end, this great long corridor.
Absolutely.
Just the thing to scare the pants off the ambassadors.
It was completely, just the idea. Completely political, just to intimidate a little bit, probably.
And I suppose the minute they appeared at the door, there would have been some kind of formal fanfare or
sure.
some piece of music which had a grand feel to it.
There were music outside in the royal court and on the Escalier des Ambassadeurs also. It was very strict and with rules very precise. And the music probably wasn't really good. It was just solemn music, but not sometimes very interesting music, just march and things like that.
Thank you.
Well, the ambassadors have been dispatched from whence they came, suitably impressed, no doubt. And time now to snatch a little air in the gardens, maybe chat up a nubile courtier or three behind the maze. But the king and his party weren't alone, were they, Olivier?
They weren't at all, because musicians played a lot outside, and there are a lot of plays in the garden, some little plays between different kind of trees, with some musicians, sometimes just three or four musicians. For example, why not Les Concerts Royaux by François Couperin? Why not? It's supposed to be mostly inside, such a piece. But why not outside in summer when the sun is rising?
I suppose there were certain instruments that would be better as outdoor instruments. I mean, apart from wind instruments, the more rustic country sounds, a musette perhaps?
Yes, musette, but also just flute, violin, lute and viol, but sometimes harpsichord. There is a charge in Versailles which is called porte-épinette, the person just to bring out the harpsichord. There is a person just to carry the instrument. So we can imagine a harpsichord outside, but in a place with some trees around just for the sound, because just here where we are, harpsichord outside in such a big place, it's impossible to hear. But in some little place in the garden, it could be really nice.
And music, like eating, is so good outdoors, isn't it?
That's it. Better than inside sometimes.
Well, we've come out onto the balcony now, overlooking the famous formal gardens here at Versailles. It's such a wonderful day. You can see for miles from this balcony, right across the formal gardens, and of course, in the distance, the Grand Canal, and finally to where all the hunting would have taken place. Louis was a very keen huntsman, wasn't he?
Absolutely. It's important to know that the hunt is really the main hobby of the royal family, especially of the king. And he made hunts about, I think, three or four times a week sometimes. And about the music for hunts, I think it's important to know that it's a music which is useful because it's music which informed about all the different events of the hunt. For example, when you see the animal, when you lost the animal, when the dogs are coming and all that. It's always some. It's not just music for ornaments at all. It's really some signal.
Premier appel. Appel pour le chien.
I mean, the hunt generally, people on horseback, they ride quite fast, particularly if they're chasing something. Are you saying that musicians were on horseback following them with their instruments?
Yes, of course. It was what we call a veneur. It's not musician, it's just person who sound trumps.
Right.
Of course, hunt trumps.
Hunting horns.
Hunting horns, that's it. And the music were always the same for special events for the hunt. But, of course, the music after what we call real composers, for example.
You mean when they return from the hunt?
Yeah, they return. The composers of the court, they use hunting horn in operas, for example, or in different kind of chamber music.
Very much the centrepiece of this wonderful grounds of the chateau. Of course, this grand canal, very wide stretch of water. Would there have been sailing on there? Would that have been used for recreation?
Yes, of course. In the summer evenings, there were sailings with the king, the royal family, and the court. There were in Versailles some gondolas which were offered to the king by the Republic of Venice. And so you have to imagine this beautiful Grand Canal with some gondolas and some music in them, because what is called the Concert de Trompette, which was written by Michel Richard de Lalande, was probably for the Grand Canal, because you have some music very interesting with some echoes, you see. There is some trumpets in a boat and other trumpets in another, and they just converse like that.
I love the idea of the wind instruments, the trumpeters, playing right by the canal there, or perhaps even in the gondolas. I mean, it's a bit of a forerunner to Handel's water music, isn't it?
Absolutely, exactly the same.
As you can probably hear, they're doing a lot of restoration here at the moment, sort of banging and crashing, I'm afraid, from time to time during the programme. But I really hope they do restore the gondolas in there. They would look fantastic. I'm sure not many people know that they were there at all.
It's one of my dreams, just to see that once in my life. And, you know, it's still now, there is a little place in the just in the middle of the Grand Canal, which is called Little Venice, Petite Venise, because of the boats.
Well, not a moment too soon. Someone's called out that supper is now served. So the royal party have moved into the grand antechamber, which is where we're standing now. Today it's surrounded by paintings of Marie Antoinette with her family. Quite moving when you think what happened to them at the end. But we're going to talk about what went on here in the time of Louis XIV. And this is perhaps where they would have had a fairly private supper, because it's not a big room, is it?
It was for the what we call the supper of the grand couvert. That means that the king eated with the royal family. And all the court assisted to that. You have to imagine that all the diner and the supper were public. And just the court didn't eat at all during this while, but they just have a look and just they have to saw to the king eating meat and all that.
So it's like feeding time at the zoo. You were sort of watching them eat.
Exactly. It was mainly like an opera. All the life of the king was like an opera with some audience in every while of the day.
So there would have been tables set up in this room and a lot of moving around with dishes, and everyone was making sure the king was eating in order to be fit and healthy and live a long life, presumably. Well, the piece we've just heard was specifically written for an occasion like this, a royal supper, wasn't it?
Yes, the piece is called La Grande Pièce Royale. It was written by Michel Richard de Lalande. It was also called La Caprice que le roi demandait souvent. That means that the king asks oftenly for this piece. And so it's wonderful for us, for modern people, to know that, because we have exactly what was the musical taste of the king with this piece, which is a beautiful piece in G minor. And really, we can say that Louis XIV has a very nice taste.
Well, before the king and his party finish their supper, and of course he'll be off to bed soon, we're going to hear another piece of music. This one's by Marin Marais, who was, I think, another favourite of Louis.
Absolutely. He was a violist player. He belonged to the music of a chamber. And he published 5 books of viol pieces. And we are listening just now a beautiful sarabande for viol and continuo. And he made also several operas. But, of course, the main thing in this music is the viol pieces.
I know Marais' playing was described as so exquisitely resonant that after hearing him, even the sound of the human voice is a disappointment, somebody said.
Wonderful.
Well, supper is done. It's the end of another day and time for bed. We're back in the king's bedchamber now. But it is amazing that Louis got any sleep at all. I mean, there are shining gold everywhere. It's dominating everything on the walls, statues, pillars, cornices, balustrades, mirror frames. It's all shining like mad. And even the curtains of this great gigantic four-poster bed are richly embroidered with golden thread. Now, I gather one of the valets actually guarded the king and his bed all through the day and the night by sleeping right next to him, even attached to him by a kind of a piece of thread of some kind. I wonder if the king found it difficult to sleep after his supper. If so, he might well have called in a musician or two, Olivier?
Yes, we suppose. He had some music at the end of the day, and probably three or four musicians who played trio of different old operas that the king liked especially. And we know that, for example, Robert de Vizet, he was a very famous guitar player, and he composed a lot of pieces for guitar. And we know that sometime Louis XIV asked for him to play the guitar in the room just at the end of the day. And after a musician, the king and the court had a rest for the night.
Well, many thanks, Olivier Beaumont, for showing us around Versailles. And to end the programme then, and to make sure that Louis XIV is soundly asleep, we're going to finish with guitar music by Robert de Vizet.
Music by de Vizet, ending today's programme, which was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced by Les Pratt. Well, tomorrow's Early Music Show comes live from the 2013 York Early Music Festival. Catherine Bott will be introducing live performances from the harpsichordist Fabio Bonizzoni, the lutenist Thomas Dunford, the Rose Consort of Viols, and the soprano Bethany Seymour. That's at the same time, a little after 1 o'clock, here on BBC Radio 3.
To complete the current season of Opera on Three, an archive performance of Wagner's Rienzi as part of our anniversary year of Wagner's work, Wagner 200. A 1976 BBC archive recording with John Mitchinson, Lois McDonnell and Lorna Haywood and the BBC Northern Symphony Orchestra and singers. A recording that came into existence following painstaking research by conductor Edward Downes and others, creating the most complete version of Rienzi ever heard. This afternoon from 4 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
Well, the 2013 proms season is nearly upon us. 2 months of great artists, composers and ensembles in over 90 concerts, all broadcast live here on BBC Radio 3. Zachary Oromo will conduct the first night of the proms this coming Friday, marking the start of his tenure as chief conductor of the BBC Symphony Orchestra. And that celebratory first concert of the season includes sea-inspired works by Britten, his four sea interludes from Peter Grimes, and Ralph Vaughan Williams's A Sea Symphony, a work combining the huge Proms Youth Choir and the BBC Symphony Chorus. And the symphony also features the soprano soloist Sally Matthews and the baritone Roderick Williams. And Roderick Williams is also the presenter of this week's edition of Saturday Classics. Here he is now.
Good afternoon and welcome to Saturday Classics here on BBC Radio 3. I'm Roderick Williams, and I have been given the opportunity to choose the music for this afternoon's programme. Yes, that's right. Today's programme is all about me. I thought I might look back down the years and present you with some of the music that had a great influence on me as a boy, music that has shaped the way I listen, sing, and compose today. And what better place to start than with my first musical memory, the moment that a piece really caught my attention and I became aware of the world of classical music. I was at the cinema, watching a short documentary film before the main feature. Do you remember when they used to do that? It was all about glass blowing. On screen at one point were these huge stained glass windows, and to accompany the film was this amazing, searing string music. Well, I was transfixed. Thank you. the Dirge from Benjamin Britten's Variations on a Theme by Frank Bridge, played by the London Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Vladimir Yurovsky. You can imagine the effect such music had on an impressionable young boy. Let me paint a picture of life growing up in the Williams household. There was always music on. Although my parents aren't musicians, they love listening to records or to the radio. As I remember it, one of my father's favourite games when switching on Radio 3 was to shout, "Composer!" as the music came on, and we'd all try to guess who had written it. For some reason in the 1970s, it frequently seemed to be a singer with piano, and we'd all shout back together, "Finzi!" I wasn't to know then that Finzi's songs would play such a part in my professional life, but years later, I did have the chance to tell the singer Stephen Varco in person how much his Finzi song recordings have meant to me.
Just begun to be endeared by stars.